Before we get into today's return engagement of the Love Know-It-Alls on Rob as a Podcast, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsor for this special Valentine's Week presentation. Those are friends over at Scentbird. And here to talk with me about Scentbird is the First Lady Podcasting, Nicole Sestrina. Nicole, how are you?
I am very good.
Nicole, I know how important you feel having the right fragrance is.
It's very important.
It's very important, but it is also expensive to buy all these different bottles of perfume to try to find the right one. Same goes for guys with cologne. Scentbird is coming along, and they are going to give you the gift of being able to try out any cologne that you want.
Yes, I've been so out of the loop on perfumes. I'm used to smelling like dirty toddler.
Yes.
And that's, you don't find that on Scentbird.
No, you do not. What Scentbird does is they allow you to choose out your cologne or perfume that you like. Because Scentbird is a luxury fragrance subscription service. Mix up your cologne or perfume routine so it doesn't get boring. You hate boring.
I hate boring, but yeah. I like to smell good.
A way to discover new colognes and perfumes without having to buy the entire bottle. Scentbird has more than 450 designer brands for you to choose a cologne or perfume for each month. Try the brands that you want. The real deal. Gucci, Tom Ford, Kenneth Cole, Burberry, Prada. Choose the cologne you want to try, and they'll send you a 30-day supply. 120 sprays. That's enough to apply four times daily for a month, Nicole.
Yes, I've been wearing Tom Ford, which I normally wouldn't be able to do because it's not in the budget.
It's perfect if you don't know what kind of scent you're looking for. You can sort colognes and perfumes by brand, occasion, season, style, and more. You can check out user ratings on any fragrance or more, or take Scentbird's True Scent quiz to discover more personalized recommendations. And just for our listeners, you can get 50% off your first month today. That's only $7.50 for your first fragrance. Go to scentbird.com/Rob. Use the promo code Rob for 50% off your first month. Again, that's Scentbird, scentbird.com/Rob to try your first cologne or perfume for just $7.50. Sign on, smell amazing. Nicole, you're really going to enjoy today's Love Know-It-Alls.
I am very excited.
Me and Steven fixing the problems of all the listeners with Gabby.
No, you're going to be causing more problems with the listeners.
Oh, no, we will not. Just you wait and see.
Hey, whatever happened to the Love Know-It-Alls?
Well, Steven was busy getting married, but now they're back.
Steven's married? I guess they really are know-it-alls then.
You better get to work on a new theme song.
The hottest guys around, they're about to break it down, like they've scored a million times before.
Well, actually, Survivor starts next week, so they're not really back at all?
The Love Know-It-All.
Yes, that is right. The Love Know-It-Alls are back. Yes.
Wow. The reason I do this podcast is just to get to hear the theme song.
Yes. The musical introduction courtesy of Steven Zampanti. Steven Fishback, how are you?
I'm great. I'm really, since the last time we did this podcast, as the intro music mentioned, I got married. So obviously the podcast has been a success for me.
Yes.
I was engaged, I think, at the last time. So, but still, you know, didn't screw it up. So
okay,
thanks.
You made it. It was February 26, 2018. The Love Know-It-Alls talked to Dr. Mike Zahalski in a classic episode of The Love Know-It-Alls.
Knock.
And we are back from the edge of extinction, courtesy of one person. There was one young woman out there who wished that the Love Know-It-Alls would be back. And here she is to be our guest. Please welcome from Survivor, David versus Goliath, Gabby Piscuzzi. Gabby, how are you?
Yes, I'm good. I'm so happy. It just goes to show if you're persistent and annoying enough about anything, it can come true.
It can come true.
So glad we have the beautiful love know-it-alls back.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Gabby, what's new with you?
Not much. Also, loved the theme song. I'm honored to be here with two people who do have love figured out because I feel like I don't. I'm like that friend that is always giving advice to people, but I'm single. So I don't know. Hopefully there's going to be some good insight here, but not much is new. I am single, as I talk about frequently on Twitter. So yeah.
I feel like my knowledge of dating has dropped off precipitously even since, you know, the very short time I've been married. Yeah. So it's great to have someone here who's actually, you know, in the mix.
So Gabby, what I'd like to know from you is that did your interest in the Love Know-It-All stem from that you felt like you were getting advice, or you felt like that you would like to come on board to give out the advice?
Oh my gosh, definitely give out the advice. I seriously am the friend that is all my friends come to me for relationship advice, whether I'm in a relationship or not. So hopefully I have something useful to say to people. But that's what I actually joked about it with somebody on the island. I forget who it was because we were very meta and we talked about the podcast and all of that. And I remember saying like, yeah, the real reason I went on Survivor was so that eventually I could go on the Love Know-It-Alls.
Oh my God. The dream achieved.
I know. Wow. Yeah, yeah. Bigger than a million. But no,
it's dangerous
it is
what
useful.
You say on the, out there on the island. You know, if you say you wish for, you know, if you say you wish to be on the Love Know-It-Alls, you don't even wish for the million. That, you know, you could wind
waste
up
your wish.
That. Yeah,
true.
Waste your wish.
Maybe it was a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Gabby, very excited to have you here. Did you have any questions you want to ask the Love Know-It-Alls before we talk about you?
Oh, we're going to talk about me. No, I just congratulations, Steven. I mean. So exciting. I know Rob has been married for a while. How is newlywed life going, Steven?
It's great. We're almost at our first year anniversary. So it's, I mean, you know, it's still, but it still feels very new.
I mean,
you've
got really ways to go. I mean, it's, yeah. It's only February.
It's really fun. It's so fun. It feels like, I mean, it's great. It's wonderful.
Okay.
It's awesome.
It's good. Good to hear, Steven.
Yeah. Okay. You sound so salty when you say that.
Well, I mean, the first year is the easiest. I mean, that was like, you know, most marriages get through the first year. It's the other years that are the tough ones. Yeah. It's like, you know, it's like day one of Survivor. It's like every, you know, most people get through that one. So
I don't know. But, you know, even the people who get through, you know, who are voted out first, you know, they still, you know, they were still there. You know, they still had like this life-changing experience. And so even if you, you know, you've got like a Kardashian marriage that lasts 3 weeks, you know, you still were married.
Yeah. No, Stephen, very happy to hear everything is going well and looking forward to getting back into regular Know-It-Alls next week as well.
Oh, my God. Is Survivor starting again?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, huh. Once again.
The 20th. Coming, wow. It's coming back. Okay.
Keeps coming.
All right. But Gabby, let's just get the primer on you and what's going on in your world in terms of what are some things that have worked for you, hasn't been working for you, just to give us some background.
Okay. Let's see. So I literally have like not been really dating or in a relationship or anything since coming back from Survivor. I think because I came back for real life context since it just finished airing, but we came back in like last May. And so I haven't been dating for like half a year because things are just so crazy. And I moved cities and it's dating is exhausting. And before Survivor and while I was on Survivor, I was actually dating someone, like not super seriously, but we were dating. And then we broke up because I moved and a bunch of other reasons. And then since then, and we had met online, actually, we met on one of the dating apps on Bumble. And I've met a couple people through that. But ever since coming back from Survivor, I've been like terrified to go back on any of the dating apps because I just like, I'm like, how has the landscape changed since then? And just moving and everything, it's like so overwhelming. So I am just like taking this time for myself, which has been awesome. But I still love love. So
What about the post-show reality cesspool? Have any other former Survivor contestants or other reality contestants caught your eyes at a charity event?
You know, it's funny. It's kind of like, it's like a, I don't know what it's like a high school reunion or something, right? It's like I was in LA for the reunion. You meet all kinds of people. And it's like, of course, it's interesting. Like, you have something in common with these people. But I think it's just like, it's, you also don't want to just be like talking to somebody because they were on Survivor. And like, I feel that way too. I think that's maybe why I'm a little nervous to like go on the dating apps, because I'm just like my worst case scenario would be someone messaging me and being like, are you Gabby from Survivor? Like, I would hate that so much. So I'm like,
that was my best case scenario. That's why I went on Survivor. So people would be like, oh, I recognize you from TV. Like, now I'm willing to date you.
Yeah. What would be so bad about that if somebody said, hey, are you Gabby from Survivor?
I think it's fine, because obviously, like, I was a Survivor fan before too. So it's, at least I would know that we have that in common. We can talk about the show. But I think it's just the fear of like, it's like an underlying fear that I think everybody has, which is that you want to be loved for who you are. You want to be seen and understood for who you are. And I thought that even before going on Survivor, you know, like, I never wanted a guy to like me just because like he thought I was cute or he whatever. It's like, I want them to understand my soul. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's like that on another level, where it's like, it's, of course it's fine if you recognize me. Like, I can't blame anyone for recognizing me, but you just want to feel like you're liked for who you really are and not like, cause you were on a TV show or something.
By the way, Steven, did you see that one of the new Survivor contestants talked about in their interviews that she matched with Cochran on one of the dating sites, that maybe like Bumble, and then asked him a bunch of questions about how to get on Survivor?
Oh, and it worked. That's really, so there you go. Dating apps are not just the key to love, but to a reality TV startup.
He just gave her a pretty generic advice, it sounded like.
Well, it's, whatever it was, it worked. I mean, maybe the generic advice is the best advice at all. But I disagree with your premise, Gabby, that, you know, there is like some true thing that like we can like be purely loved for the pure essence of our soul. Yeah, you never know why someone likes you. It's like whether you remind them subconsciously of a relative, or like, you know, you know, you're their type in some crucial way, whether that's because of the books you read or, you know, what you look like, or, you know, I just feel like we can never know for sure why someone likes us. And who cares? Who cares? Like, what the, I mean, what the reason is.
That's true. I think maybe I'll rephrase it. I guess I mean, I don't want to be liked for some idealized version of me. And so, of course, like, if somebody knows me from Survivor, that's fine. But if somebody feels like they know me from Survivor, then that's wrong, because they don't really know me. So I would just want them to get to know the real me. And I felt like that my whole life, like even before going on Survivor, you know, it would be like, it's kind of just like, I feel like it's a very typical thing that I've gotten throughout my whole life. Like, because I am, okay, this is going to sound so bad, but I feel like I am really friendly and nice. And what has happened with me throughout a lot of my life is like, I get a lot of the sort of like nice guy thing, where you have guys that are like, well, she's nice to me, she must like me. But it's like, really, we just had one class together or something. And then he like has a super crush on me. And I'm like, oh, sorry, like, we don't actually know each other. But it's like, he's fallen in love with some idea of me.
Right.
And that's like, I don't like that, because it's like, you don't actually know me. You're just like projecting what you want me to be onto me.
So what do you do in that situation?
Say like, thank you, but no, thank you. Mm-hmm.
You probably identify it sooner before the person actually says something. Do you have to be proactive about that?
No, that's my problem, is I never know. I'm so guilty of this. It's so annoying, but it's like, I never really know that a guy likes me until it's like way too late. And then he tells me that he likes me, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Like, I thought that I was just being nice. Like, by the way, now I feel bad. Now I feel like if anybody I have ever liked listens to this, they're going to be like, wow, she is fake.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's probably a not uncommon experience for people, right? Is that, like, you know, people, whenever you're liked and you don't like a person back, it's largely because that other person is projecting some sort of, you know, depth of relationship that isn't there. I don't think what you're saying is that, you know, that doesn't sound cruel or heartless to me.
Okay, good. I'm glad. Yeah, so I think to answer your question, Rob, I'm not proactive about it because I don't realize it's happened until the person like tells me that they like me. And then if I am interested in them, then that's great. And if I'm not, then I usually am like, oh, I'm sorry, just view us as friends. Or, I mean, if it's someone I really don't know, I probably wouldn't say this to them, but I would be thinking like, what the heck? Like, why do you even like me? Like, you don't know me.
Mm-hmm. Now that you are, out of like the immediate aftermath of Survivor, how has your dating approach changed now?
Well, I would say right now it's non-existent because I really am just like going, like trying to get into a pattern of like loving myself, which I feel like is something that everybody should do before they're seriously in a relationship. Like the worst thing is when you see people like, you know, serial dating, or they're just like so unhappy with themselves that they're jumping from bad relationship to bad relationship because they just like don't want to be alone. Like, I think there's a lot to be said in being comfortable being alone, but I'm just really working on like fostering deep relationships and connections with people that are already in my life. And that's where I find a lot of my, that's just where I find a lot of happiness is in relationships with friends. And whether that progresses into something more in the future, who knows? Or, you know, maybe they have a friend that they introduced me to. That's kind of like, I'm just like chilling. I'm not like actively on the hunt for anything. And I think I'm hoping that that is the best case scenario for me. Because I kind of feel like sometimes when you're like looking really, really hard and you're freaking out and you're like, oh, I don't want to be single. I hate being single. Oh my God, I would do anything just to not be alone this Valentine's Day. It's like, you're going to end up in the wrong relationship. You're just going to rush into something that's not really right for you.
And what do you say to people who are single this Valentine's Day and feeling bad about it, Gabby?
Don't feel bad. Oh my gosh. It's a holiday made up by our capitalist overlords to make us buy chocolate and cards. No, I mean, I'm joking.
That's right.
Capitalist overlords have given us a lot of great things.
McDonald's.
Yeah,
a fan of McDonald's. Wendy's. All
my whole apartment
deal.
Is like Apple. You know, oh my God, thank you. You know, giant industry for giving me all these incredible technological devices.
And yeah, Valentine's.
No, I'm celebrating Galentine's Day. Ooh, tomorrow.
How does that work?
Yeah, so I think it was first popularized on Parks and Rec.
Yes, Leslie Knope.
Yes, Leslie Knope puts together Galentine's Day, the day before Valentine's Day, just for your gal pals. And it's just to remind ourselves that, you know, you don't have to be in a romantic relationship to have meaningful relationships, and that friendships are equally as important and valid as romantic relationships. So I'm having a little get together with some girlfriends tomorrow. And,
oh, that's fun.
Oh my gosh, it's going to be fun. But I have to tell you this. I tweeted about this, but I'm sure not everyone follows me on Twitter. But somebody, one of the girls, commented in the Facebook event for Galentine's Day and said, would it be weird if I brought my boyfriend?
Yeah.
And like, no, just nobody replied. It just, everyone just left the comment there and just did not acknowledge it. Cause it's like, yes, that would be weird. Yes, that kind of defeats the purpose of Galentine's Day.
But she may be bringing her boyfriend since no one has told her no.
Oh God, I hope not. Well, I really hope not.
Joke's on him because he's going out for Galentine's Day and then has to go out for Valentine's Day.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
True.
Maybe she's trying to give him the hint, like, this is not a great situation for you.
Yeah. Look, yeah, I could be single like these girls. It's my guy friend's birthday on Valentine's Day. And he was wondering, we were talking about, it's like, well, does your girlfriend take you out to dinner for your birthday or do you take her out for Valentine's Day? What do you guys think?
Tough one. I mean, I defer. I think, you know, you do the one that's an actual celebration of your life and not a Hallmark holiday, I guess. So maybe yeah. The birthday.
I don't know. I'm a big believer in not going out for Valentine's Day because it's a nightmare out there.
There's always like heart themed, you know, desserts. Like, you know, you don't need that.
It's the New Year's Eve of dinner. Yeah. You know, it's like it's amateur hour. Everybody's out. There's $1 million to go anywhere. Forget it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's actually kind of fun just to look around at other tables, just having these really awkward, pained conversations. Like, there's so much pressure to have it be this romantic evening that nobody is having fun.
Okay.
That's right.
Well, let's start having even more fun as we get to the questions from our listeners. We got a ton of email. Sorry we won't be able to get to all of it here on this podcast today. Who knows? Maybe you never know when the Love Know It Alls will pop back up. Steven, which of these questions do you want to hit first?
First question is the first one that happens to be in our shared Google document.
Yes.
What is the best approach from Pierce? My question is about approaching. I've recently started putting myself out in the dating scene and even saw a dating coach. We worked on approaching. I have an open, fun personality, but the coach told me to scale it back. When I did, the women I approached, I could strike up conversations. However, I felt like I was inauthentic, like I wasn't being the real me. My question is, should I be myself or the version that was getting a result? Thanks. Pierce, what do you think, guys?
I don't really understand what the dating coach told him to do. So he was too friendly and then the dating coach told him to scale it back?
Yeah.
Hmm. He doesn't like that.
I think that's probably a reasonable thing for a coach to say, like playing it cool, you know, like seeming uninterested. Yeah. That's like the most cliche dating advice there is.
Yeah.
Oh, is that how you understood it? I understood it as like maybe Pierce is a little over the top and he's like a lot, like he's like the loud, crazy one in the friend group. And the dating coach is like, that might be a little overwhelming if you approach somebody like that.
Yeah. That's how I mean, playing it cool.
Yeah. But if he's feels like he's not being the real him, it sounds like that these even if he like, OK, now he gets the woman's phone number, then if he's like pretending to be somebody that he's not, it doesn't seem like it's going to work out.
I really disagree with that. I feel like, you know, who's the real you? Who's like the real one of any of us? We all act differently in different circumstances and we all act differently in ways that are appropriate to those circumstances. You act like a different person if you're at a business meeting than you do if you're like out with your guy friends. I think to like modulate your behavior in order to like ask someone out or to, you know, to begin a conversation with someone is a completely reasonable way to be. I mean, I think, you know, when you go out, a lot of people have their defenses up, right? And so it would be absurd to just like be really out there and wild and in someone's face and not give them the chance to know you because they are immediately taking a step back and backing off. So I feel like it's like a totally sensible thing to approach someone with a little bit more chill.
Gabby, what about this, that you end up talking to somebody at a bar and you hit it off and then you end up learning later they're not like the person that you initially thought they were?
Yeah, I think there's a difference between being scaled back and being inauthentic. Like I agree with Steven, I think. You can still be your true self. It is still me when I'm at a work meeting and I'm presenting a more polished version of myself. It's still me. I never feel like I'm being inauthentic, but it is a different, it's a different level. So I think if Pierce can strike the balance between being yourself, but just toning it down a little bit, you know, you don't need to like, say all, you know, on a first date, say all of your deepest, darkest secrets or say all of your colorful jokes, then you can give the person a taste of who you are and still have moments of authenticity, but not scare them away right off the bat.
Yeah.
And I think you do sort of have to modulate your personality. You know, like any relationship is, right, you're meeting someone halfway. You're like being as interested in being, you know, being in their interests, you're meeting them where they are emotionally, you know, as well as being your like true self. So, you know, I don't feel like, you know, whatever, I don't know, like this idea that like there's like some pure version of me that like I have to be so true to that even if it's alienating everybody else around me, like that's the true me. Like what about like changing to be more, you know, to be more likable to those around you? I don't think that's a bad thing.
Yeah, but if the question was different, if the question was like, hey, I don't know what to do, like I feel like I can't meet anybody, but this person has already gone out and they're already like working with the coach and the coach is like giving them advice and they're saying that, you know, but I don't like this.
Right.
That I kind of feel like if you don't like it this way, then don't do it. That like if you're, you know, a real weirdo, let your freak flag fly.
I don't know. Everything's a trade-off. Like if you think it's more important to let your freak flag fly than it is to meet people, then that's a choice you're making. You're right. You're saying like, I want to be me whether or not I meet people. If you're saying, hey, I want to like rein that in a little bit in order to meet people. And then maybe together we can hoist our own like shared half freak, half you flag. Then that's a different choice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with that actually. Cause I feel like I do like to let my freak flag fly. And I tend to think like, oh, well, if somebody is going to like me, they're going to like me for all of me and for who I am. But at the same time, I'm totally a hypocrite. Cause if a guy was a total weirdo on the first date, I would be like, that's weird. Even though maybe like if I was a couple months into knowing him, I might think it was really funny or I might like it. So yeah, I think there is something to be said about, I think Pierce should get his foot in the door first with toning it down a little bit, meet people that way. And then, you know, a couple dates in, you start revealing your true self. So I think don't be inauthentic, but also, you know, just let it come out in a natural way, not all at once.
Yeah, I guess the real question for us is like, what is exactly the delta between date Pierce and real Pierce?
Right. And also like, you know, you see dating coach and you do worry, like, is this some sort of like cheesy line based thing? And it sounds like, you know, that maybe not. Right. It sounds like Pierce respects this person and has, you know, is willing to try out what he's learning. But, you know, you always get a little, or I do when I hear dating coach, I think like, are you being fed a certain type of personality?
Is it Albert Destrade?
Exactly. Yeah. Versus like, you know, well, it's one thing to like tone back who you are and another to adopt a personality that's different than yours.
Oh yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. Oh, don't do that. Never do that. Don't ever like, because what are those terrible books that are like The Game and those game books that are like How to Pick Up Women? Like, don't do that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Got another question. It's a question from Spike. And this is a question about maybe a feng shui question. And Spike wants to know, Spike was reading an article on Vice, and it said it was about how men who are single and have their mattresses on the floor. And many women in the article seem to believe that this was a huge turnoff. Spike himself enjoys having his mattress on the floor and sees no need to have a bed frame. Obviously, if it meant that he needed to change to make a lady friend happy, he would oblige. But what's the big deal? He enjoys being close to the ground. It's not like you're going to fall out and hurt yourself. It keeps the annoying squeaking sound away while you're fornicating.
So what do you say?
Do I, a 36-year-old male, need to change my lifestyle of enjoying my mattress on the ground? Or should the women I choose just accept the change of pace and stop being so damn judgmental? Spike.
Stop. Oh my God. Is Spike one of my friends calling in to troll? I swear.
Why? Is this an issue that you have had to deal with?
Okay. Yeah. This is like not, it's not just me. It's all women, but I shouldn't speak. Hashtag not all women. But that's like a legitimate grievance. Like it is an immediate turnoff if somebody's bed is on the floor. Like you're a 36-year-old, you're a grown ass man. Get yourself a bed frame. Like go to IKEA. They're like a couple $100. Mine is from Amazon. Okay. You can order it online.
Yeah.
Build it with your hands, you know, like get, you know, feel connected to your bed. You spend like a third of your life in in bed, you know, sleeping. So like, respect yourself a little bit, like elevate yourself off the ground. Okay. We're not on Survivor. Like, you can afford a bed frame.
Even on Survivor, they tell you don't sleep on the ground.
They do. They say elevate.
So you got to elevate off the ground because then the bugs get on you.
I think this is another thing. It's like trade-offs, you know. If you like being on the ground more than you like, you know, placating the people around you, you know, that's your prerogative. But like, you know, any relationship is meeting someone where they are. And just because you love your bed, you know, I feel like you've got to be respectful to what you to the people to you know, the people you're having over.
Yeah, I think it's a little frat house to just have the mattress on the ground. I think that you could probably, if you don't want a box spring, you feel like that's getting you too high off the ground, you don't need the box spring. But I do think, I mean, you can't really make the bed if it's on the floor like that. So I do think that most, forget like, you know, women for dates. I think that most civilized people expect the mattress to be off of the floor. I mean, there's dirt on the floor. I feel like it's, you know, a hop, skip, and a jump for the dirt then to get onto the bed. So, you know, your sheets are touching the floor. I think I think that probably I would, you know, get the bed frame.
Robert, there's a little bit of inconsistency between your responses to Pierce and Spike. With Pierce, you're saying, let your freak flag fly. With Spike, you're saying, you know, don't let your freak flag touch the floor because, you know, you gotta get a bed frame to elevate that thing.
That's fair. And look, if that's his thing, but I mean, he's saying like, I don't care. Like, I'll do it if people want me to. But in the case, if it was for Spike that he's like, no, I love having my mattress on the floor, then I'd say, look, you do you. You know, if that's your thing, then, you know, hopefully it's not a deal breaker. But if he's concerned that, you know, are people going to judge him if he doesn't have, you know, if he has his mattress on the floor? Yeah, I think people are going to judge you. You bring somebody to your house, even your friends. It's like, yeah, I just keep my mattress on the floor.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's not great. It's not great.
I mean, you could put your TV on the floor, too, and people are going to come over and think you're weird.
Yeah,
there's a point in which you have to elevate yourself above, you know, it's fine to have a bachelor pad. But like you said, you don't want it to be a frat house. Like, and I am telling you, yeah, you can do it. You might even get a lady to come over. You might even get her to spend the night. But she will text her friends and make fun of you. 100%. 100%.
Okay. See, why don't we go to question number four?
Johnny says, I'm in need of some love advice, so I'm coming to the only people I know will understand. I am in a loving and committed relationship. We are very happy 90% of the time, but like all couples, we have moments of disagreements and arguments. Typically, however, this is due to my girlfriend's hot temper. She's a sweet, kind person, except when she gets hungry, is left waiting, or is tired. In those moments, the fire in her eyes is real and scary. I am personally okay living with this, as it is contained to once, maybe twice a month, and I am pretty good at mitigating it. The question is, what are some additional good ways to mitigate it? Should I leave her alone and give her space when she is mad, with the risk of her spiraling and getting mad about more things? Or should I persuade her into talking it out during those times? Rob, what do you do when the FLOP gets worked up over something? Mm-hmm. Thanks, and I'm really excited for the episode. I think Gabby is wonderful.
Yes. I've never related more to an emailer. I think people are going to think that I wrote this in myself, but then it would be silly for me to ask advice for myself. Now, Gabby, how is your temper? Would you say that you have a temper?
I have been known to be extremely unemotional. I basically never wear my emotions on my sleeves. I don't know if you guys knew that about me. Yeah. No, I don't know. I'm conflicted about this question because on the one hand, I can relate. Like, I definitely can have a temper sometimes. I'm an Aries and I just have a little bit of a short temper. But at the same, I feel like we just like don't have context because at the same time, like, I think it's like a scary notion to be like walking on eggshells around your significant other. Like, I don't know, like, how tongue-in-cheek this person was being, but it's like, are they genuinely, like, scared of their significant other? Or is it like, I don't know.
Okay, well, let me speak from my experience with,
yes, please,
with my significant other. Because I think I've at times have done well and at times have not done as well. And I definitely can relate to what the emailer is saying about, you know, he is in a relationship with a sweet and kind person, except when she gets hungry, is left waiting, or is tired. And, you know, as I like to say about the First Lady of Podcasting, is the most wonderful person when everything is perfect. And then, you know, at times then can lash out a bit. But I really think that what you need to do, I think that what I found to work the best is, I think that you need to be the opposite when your partner is upset or angry. Then I think you need to be, you know, much more stoic and not emotional, because I feel like that the biggest fights that I've ever gotten into with my wife is when, you know, she is upset or angry about something, and then I match her in terms of what she is giving me, because she does not back down. It only just, you know, it's like now two storms are meeting and becoming even like the perfect storm. Mm.
For sure. Yeah. No, that's, I would agree with that. When I have a temper flare up or I'm emotional about something, what helps me the most is when the other person is calm and level-headed. And usually, like, I'll get over it and I'll be able to laugh at myself and be like, oh yeah, I'm being a little crazy right now. So I totally agree with that. You never want to, like, also lash out at somebody that's already upset.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea of getting space, you know, like I do think it's like hard in the moment when someone is mad or there's a fight brewing to give each other space or to even like yourself know that you need space. But my experience has been like, if I just go away and get some space, like I can kind of center myself a little bit and come down when I'm upset. I do want to say this is a little bit, I question, you know, the authority here of this questioner, where it's like, my girlfriend is hot-headed and mean, and I, of course, am this incredible loving soul and I'm wonderful at mitigating it and am in no way responsible for her crazy
text. Well, we can only take the first person account of the emailer.
Yeah,
that's what I was trying to say at the beginning. That's why I was kind of like tiptoeing, because I was like, I don't know, because that's like also a thing, right? That's why I was trying to figure out, like, is the person genuinely upset? Or I know, because I'm an emotional person. I get really annoyed when a significant other is like, oh, you're just being emotional, and it like feels so dismissive, and you're like, you, like they're like portraying me in some way that I don't think that is like super truthful. So that's why I was tiptoeing around at the beginning, too, because I agree with you, Steven. I'm like, we don't have the whole story here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't have the whole story. We're going off of, you know, just the specific question. But I do feel like that, you know, if your partner is upset, that I feel like that it's your job to try to be level headed. And hopefully, you know, when you're upset about something, your partner will also try to be level headed, because when you're both upset, very few good things happen.
Right.
Yeah.
So I say try to ride it out. Try to be calm. And hope, and then, you know, it's hard to keep up, you know, really strong emotions for, you know, a long time. And then, you know, things eventually go back to normal and then you can talk about it. But it's hard to, you know, talk things through when somebody is that upset.
Yeah.
Do you go in immediately with like hugs? Are you like, hey, I see that you're really mad. Like, did you go in like with a physical contact?
No? I find that is not the answer.
Okay. Hugs are always
not
the answer.
I would not like that.
Except, I guess, in this case. Yeah.
Yeah. I hear a lot of get away from me.
I would want someone to just be like, yeah, be calm and listen and like not. Okay. This is the thing also. I feel like men always want to try to fix things. And like, right, sometimes you just need to not try to fix something. You just need to let me be upset for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys ever heard that before?
Heard that before. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought you might have. I feel like that's a, I try not to like a stereotype for genders, but I feel like that is something that I've noticed, that men are always like, how do I fix this problem? And I'm like, you don't understand. I'm just annoyed right now. Like, or I'm just upset right now. You just need to let me be upset and I'll get over it when I get over it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that probably, you know, most couples, you have probably one person who is, you know, that more like gets angry, loses their temper quicker. And then the other person ends up, you know, balancing that out. I feel like that's probably a dynamic that most couples have.
Maybe. I never thought about that. I think maybe it gave me pause because I'm like, oh, crap, does that mean that I'm the one? I feel like I'm maybe the one that gets upset more often than.
I don't know. Julia and I are very balanced. Like, I will get upset she will calm me down, and or she'll get upset and I'll try to calm her down. I think that we're balanced.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you can have two people that neither of them gets upset. But if you have two people that both are like frequently getting upset, I feel like that's not going to stand the test of time.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Not at all. No. Then those types of people are just like addicted to the drama. You know what I mean?
It'll burn hot and fast, but you know, not for the long haul. Okay. Steven, let me bring back somebody who was from our season one podcast.
A season? Are we in season two?
This is maybe like the Black Mirror Choose Your Own Adventure episode.
Oh, okay. So,
sort of like exists. Yes, it exists in its own plane of existence. It's not really. It's like a season 2A.
Yeah, okay.
All right. This is one from Dave. Dave says, hey, Love Know-It-Alls and Third Wheel Gabby. I wrote in season one and I wanted to know if I should get in better shape to make up for my personality flaws. I ended up dating for a while when I was in better shape, but things never felt quite right. And I put on some weight after that ended. It was unrelated. Anyway, recently I was dating around for a bit until I was narrowing it down to seeing one person. We see each other once or twice a week and text every day. It will be a month on Valentine's Day, but we haven't defined the relationship. And I don't feel any, that's the acronym. I don't feel any pressure to figure it out at the moment. Is there a time to bring that up by, or is it fine to wait until it comes up naturally? Also, am I expected to do anything special for Valentine's Day? I realized I needed to ask her to really know, but I wanted to get your thoughts. Thanks, Dave.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Ooh, there's a lot of like little questions in there. I feel like this is going to be interesting to break down.
Okay, so let's just give the bullet points here. Dating or seeing each other for about a month. Seems like that this is the only person that he is seeing. Looking to define the relationship and what to do for tricky Valentine's Day.
And they text every day.
Texting every day.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Well, congrats on finding... you know, getting back into the dating game, it sounded like there was like a little bit of a like process with that. And I know this wasn't the main part of what this person sent in, but like with the gaining weight or like working out, my philosophy on that is like, do whatever the hell you want. And like, don't ever do something to like please other people. Like, I definitely get the like urge to, you know, like be healthy and just be whatever. But like, I don't know. I don't know if this was not the point, but I just wanted to like throw that out there and say like, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. It sounds like that Dave has figured that out on his own, that that he is no longer, trying to go all out to improve his dating prospects in terms of his workout regimen.
That's awesome. Dude, Valentine's Day after like a month of dating is so hard because it's like that. It's so awkward. I would say, well, now we're only like a couple of days away from it. If you're not going to take her out to dinner or something like that, then, you know, maybe get her a card or send her a nice text or give her a call and just say, I've really enjoyed the past month with you. I've really enjoyed getting to know you. Like, you know, we'll plan some fun dates for the future. Like, I think you don't need to make a huge deal about it, but it would be nice to acknowledge it. And if you guys want to spend time together, then spend time together. It doesn't have to be a dinner out. You could just maybe get together and, cook something at home or just have like a casual date.
Card is tricky, Gabby.
Is it?
Yeah, like, because they're also like romantic, you know, all the Valentine's, you can't get, and like, either you're giving this like heart covered, glittery red Valentine's Day card, or you're giving, you know, what's the other alternative like?
Yeah.
You know,
from now you're letting the card, Hallmark, define a relationship.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah. Don't let Hallmark DTR. Okay. Maybe card was a bad idea. I'm a words of affirmation girl. So I feel like I'm like, I would love like a handwritten note, but yeah, maybe don't get like the heart covered card.
Mm-hmm.
What about chocolates?
Yeah. Chocolates is great. Chocolates is great.
What about like, you know, giant chocolate in the shape of a huge heart?
Okay, whenever I was dating and did have things planned for Valentine's Day, I feel like I always approached it with like a tinge of irony.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I feel like if you gave someone a heart-shaped chocolates and you acknowledge that like it was kind of corny or it was funny or whatever, that might be okay. I don't know. I feel like irony is always the answer.
Yeah. Are the chocolates a hit in a romantic relationship? I feel like that's kind of like a mom gift more than...
Oh, no. I mean, obviously, you're not in a relationship where chocolate is highly valued. That's like our currency in this household. It's like,
yeah, it's like you never get a good one. It's like you got to use the map to figure out what you're getting in there.
Math.
You know, I don't like the truffles. No. But like chocolate, you know, my God.
Like what kind of chocolate?
You know, like a bar of really good chocolate.
So you would give it like a bar of chocolate, like a gift?
Not like a Hershey bar, but like a nice bar of chocolate.
Give me an example. What is a nice bar of chocolate?
Like a Labradick, or, you know, like the Mast.
Labradick.
L.A. Birdick, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I'll ask Nicole about the Labradick.
I think it may be L.A. Like... Birdick, but actually, yeah.
Either way.
This is very gourmet. I was imagining, like, you know, the like boxes and they're like seashells or there's something. And then there's, I think this is what you meant by map, right? There's like a little, right, like a legend and it's like, this one is hazelnut. And there's always like three that are really bad.
Yeah, like
and
no a one Russell ever Stover.
Russell Stover. One time I did try to ironically.
Like those.
I tried to. I tried to buy someone a box of those once and I accidentally bought like a disgusting, like sugar free. Oh, it was horrible.
Yeah. So
would not recommend.
I don't know. That would not be a big hit for Nicole, those things. But, you know, everybody to each their own. But Gabby, can you go back to the DTR in terms of like what is the point when people need to have that conversation?
You know, there's no set time frame. That's what's really hard, is it's so dependent on your relationship. So for some people, it might be a month. For some people, it might be 3 months. I think it depends on the speed that your relationship is progressing. I think that the time to have the DTR, define the relationship talk, is when you find yourself like thinking about it and almost like stressing about it. Like if it's stressing you out, thinking, oh, are we exclusive? Is this person my girlfriend? Is this person my boyfriend? And it's like causing you distress, then I think you need to talk about it. I don't think you should talk about it just to like slap a label on it. If it's working for you as it is now, just keep going. Just enjoy it. But if it's like something that's keeping you up at night that you're like, I don't know what to call this person. Like, are they my boyfriend, then maybe have the DTR talk.
And how do you have that conversation? Because my gut tells me that you don't want to open up and say, let's define the relationship.
Oh my God. No, probably not.
That would be bad.
It's the worst. It's the worst.
That would be like,
DTR.
We're both single now.
What is DTR? Yes. Is it like monogamous, non-monogamous, or like, or is it like boyfriend and girlfriend? Like, what are we clarifying even here?
I think that is what it is. Is define the relationship. Is how are we defining this relationship? Mm-hmm. So it's like all the questions that you just asked. It's like, are we exclusive? Are we putting a label on it? I mean, you could come out of a DTR conversation and say, we're just friends with benefits. That's still DTR. I mean, you're still defining it. It's just that you're defining it in that way. But it's the worst conversation to have. I hate it.
Yeah.
It is kind of necessary because at a certain point you do want to know, are we exclusive? Are we seeing each other? Am I calling you my boyfriend? But it's like, there is no good way to bring it up. I think the way to bring it up is telling the person, first of all, you have to have a sense of like, I hope that you have a sense of whether this person likes you or not. Like, it'd be really uncomfortable to have a DTR talk super early in a relationship where you're like, not even sure if the other person really likes you. Like, I feel like you at least have to have like a baseline level of trust and communication and like openness.
Yeah. So then what if you just are out somewhere with somebody and then when you meet somebody new, you just make the introduction of like, hey, Gabby, this is my boyfriend, Steven. And then if he's like, hey, boyfriend, what? then you know. Yeah. And then you'd be like, oh, I'm just joking.
Well, you know, maybe that's how it happens, right? You know, you're like, what? You're my boyfriend. The end.
And you don't have to have the awkward conversation.
Yeah.
It has happened like that to me before, actually. Somebody did do that to me. And it was like, we talked about it afterwards in private. And it was like, oh, like, I don't know. I think you're my girlfriend. And I was like, oh, I guess I am. So like, sometimes it can go okay. That would be really awkward if you did that and you had only been dating the person for like a week or 2 weeks. So like, you have to have some kind of sense of where you're at. But I think you go about it by just telling the person what they mean to you and that, you know, you have to bear yourself. You have to be open yourself and say, I really like you and I would like this to be exclusive or whatever it is. I mean, hopefully, I don't think people are bringing up DTR relationships to be like, let's define the relationship. I'm hooking up with like five other people. How about you?
Oh, you're my OTP.
OTP.
My one true pair.
Oh. Yeah. So, I mean, I think by the time you're thinking about having a DTR talk, you probably already have an idea. And my advice is if the DTR talk goes badly, then actually, I don't really have advice for that. then maybe it was too early and that like you don't need to like get scared out of it, but I just think people are not usually having these conversations before they're ready to. I hope not. I don't know.
Okay. Steven, you want to go to question number six?
Our next question. Girlfriend has anxiety from Curtis. My girlfriend and I have been together for over a year. She has very bad anxiety. It is keeping her from progressing further with our relationship. She has a past where men didn't try as hard or act as interested in their relationship with her as I am. She always says it is weird for her, and she is more in her comfort zone watching a movie than speaking on the phone with me for long periods of time. Since we are in semi-long distance relationship, 90 minutes, it is the most communicating we can do. She also never wants to do a lot of things that I want to do. It is always do and watch and listen to what she wants to. I know it is part of her comfort zone and do not want to get upset at her for it, especially since I'm not the biggest fan of her choice in music and movies. I know it is all due to her anxiety, and I want to support her and make her feel better. But I am worried that I will end up saying or doing something that will upset her greatly or make the situation worse. What can I do and how can I approach the situation without making her feel anxious or like I am upset with her?
Mm.
Wow. Great question and great dramatic reading by Stephen Fischbach.
Yes.
You know, they just moved me. Really,
very serious.
I mean, I feel like I can jump in as somebody that I feel like I'm very open, that I have anxiety and I'm a very anxious person. And so I empathize with both people in this question, with both the girlfriend who has anxiety, as well as the person who obviously cares enough and loves his girlfriend enough to write in, which is so sweet. However, I have to say, like, as somebody with, you know, anxiety, I never think that like a mental illness or a mental like whatever is an excuse for and I'm not calling what they described bad behavior, mm-hmm. but it should never be an excuse for anything. So like this is why, you know, I go to therapy, and this is why people need to go to therapy and go do, people need to really work on themselves, and you really can't fix somebody else, right? I think that's the underlying thing, is like, it's so great that this person is such a supportive partner, but you really can't fix your girlfriend's anxiety. And I really feel like that's something that has to come from her first, whether it's seeking therapy or couples therapy or whatever it is. I definitely understand that it's a road bump. What do you call those?
Speed bumps.
Speed bump. I feel like if at all possible, like it shouldn't be, like taking away from like enjoyment and like, you know, you're like couple dumb. Is that too harsh to say right away?
No, I'm with you on this sounds, off to me, where that they can only do what she wants to do because of her anxiety.
That jumped out to me as well.
That sounds like to me
more
too.
Like selfishness than anxiety.
That might be too strong of a word to say selfishness, but it doesn't seem like that they are on an even playing field. It seems like that one person holds, you know, all of the power in this relationship, and the other person is just, you know, helpless because that he doesn't want to, you know, upset her in any way because of her anxiety.
Yeah, I think that like having anxiety or having any kind of like mental disorder is never an excuse for like being a jerk. And I'm not saying that she's a jerk, but like I just have other friends that like I've heard this kind of thing before. It's like, well, I have ADHD, so I like always flake on plans. Like, that's not an excuse. You know what I mean? So it's like, mm-hmm. just because you have anxiety doesn't mean that it's an excuse to like only stay in this bubble, where it's like, I totally understand it. As an anxious person, there are days where I just want to stay in bed and do nothing and like watch the same show that I've always watched on repeat. But that's a me problem. And that's like something that I need to go to therapy for, and that my partner, while it's nice that they're being accommodating, there's a difference between being accommodating and being a pushover. And you actually might not be like helping your partner get better as you would if you like encourage them to, not in a pushy way. I mean, I'm assuming like these people have been together for a little while, just based on how it was written, but like, encouraging the person to like go to therapy or get help and get out of their comfort zone, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
One thing that jumped out to me about this question that made me was this line: it is keeping her from progressing further with our relationship. And I didn't know if that was an unfair expectation. You know, I'm sort of on the fence, because on the one hand, it's my initial reaction to reading that line was, you know, why does she have to progress further? You know, is that fair to her, this expectation that she's going to be progressing further, or whatever that means, in a relationship? On the other hand, it's not fair to Curtis. You know, obviously you do want a relationship to progress. And, you know, that's the whole point of investing yourself in a relationship, is that the hope that it does progress from dating to something more serious. So did that resonate one way with either or the other with either of you guys?
It sounds like to me that maybe she doesn't want to progress any further with the relationship, that she doesn't want to talk to him on the phone. She, you know, doesn't really care about, you know, any of his choices in doing anything. And maybe she's trying to give him a hint.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that it sounds like Curtis is extremely accommodating and is trying to be compassionate. But there are two people in a relationship, and you have needs as well. And it's great that he's catering to his girlfriend's needs, who maybe has a little more needs because of her anxiety. But at the same time, you don't want to just, if you have needs that you want to talk on the phone, or you want to watch a new TV show, or whatever you need out of a relationship, those are very valid too. And you don't want to get to the point where 5 years from now, 10 years from now, you're resenting your partner, and neither the girlfriend nor Curtis would benefit from that. Where if you're starting to feel like you're boxed in, or you're not able to be your true self, then it's not going to be the best outcome for either of you, including the girlfriend.
Okay.
So now the last part of Curtis's question, I think, is the most important part. I don't know if we've really necessarily – I think we've only kind of like touched on it, which is what can I do and how can I approach the situation? What kind of advice can we actually offer Curtis on, you know, real practical next steps?
Mine is going to sound a little harsh, but I don't know if his girlfriend is listening, but I would say this is really tough. Well,
when we don't know if he's listening, if his girlfriend doesn't want to listen.
I mean, really, it sounds very pragmatic, but I would say that if the girlfriend does not go to therapy, that she should be, or maybe I would suggest couples therapy. I've never gone to couples therapy, but like, I hope that if I have like a significant other for a long period of time, if I'm married or something, that's something that I would go to proactively. I'm not even saying like there's a problem and you need to fix it. Like, I just think that's a great thing that like literally a professional psychologist can be like, okay, like where's this anxiety coming from? How do we like, how can we get the girlfriend to try new things? How, like, I don't know. Is that like too practical? I don't know.
No, we did it. Julie and I did it like before we got married. We thought it made sense. Like, let's talk to, you know, let's go to a couples therapist just to like talk through whatever the issues are that might come up, even if we don't have those issues yet, you know, just to like talk through any of our concerns and hopes for the future in a professional setting. I don't think it's crazy. I think if you know, maybe that's a form of DTRing, right? Like, are we at the stage in this relationship where we're both invested enough to try to fix these problems?
Yeah, but she doesn't even want to talk to him on the phone for long periods of time. They're going to go to, you know, couples counseling in this relationship of like that. They're only together for a little over a year. It's a long distance relationship.
Well, this is where I go to like, you can't fix other people. Yeah. So, I mean, you really have to. It sounds like he's doing plenty. He's really accommodating and he's even writing in to look for things. So if, right. I think if he's doing everything he can to like make her comfortable and try to like work with her and it's still not going anywhere, then like he can only do so much. You really cannot fix somebody else.
Yeah.
What about having a conversation with her?
If I may be so bold, I think it might be time to make her a little uncomfortable and talk about what's bothering him.
Yeah.
And if that is going to be, if that's a deal breaker of like, no, we can only do what I want to do, then, you know, it's time to reevaluate, I think, for Curtis.
Yeah, it definitely seems like you're at the point where you should, you know, you've got to bring this up in a setting where you are together so that you're not talking on the phone, because these are serious issues and they do affect the future of your relationship. But maybe, you know, take the time to actually talk through the things that are concerning you, especially the fact that you feel like none of your interests are being recognized and that you're constantly accommodating hers.
Okay. All right, let's take a question from one of our listeners, Jack. Jack recently got out of a 2-year relationship and has forayed back into the field through app dating. And he says it's been daunting. He's gone on a few dates, but so far has only been interested in one girl. First date went well. Before the second date, numerous friends told him that if a second date goes well, you're supposed to kiss. Many people told Jack this. They met for drinks and it was great. But as he walked to the subway station, he began to feel nervous about initiating the kiss. He's out of practice. So they said goodbye and they just stood there for a solid 5 seconds. It was clear she wanted him to make the move. And finally, he said, "Can I kiss you?" Instantly, he knew this was not the right move. It can be charming and polite to ask, but I'm pretty sure it came off as insecure and nervous, which it was. She seemed a bit thrown off. And so he asked then if it was a weird question. And then she said yes. And then they uncomfortably went back and forth. And then she kissed him. And he wasn't prepared for it. It was a bad kiss. And he would left thinking he would never hear from her again. He's mortified. Later, he texted her a meme that they had spoken about during the date and figured that if she responded, she was interested. She responded enthusiastically and they texted back and forth. And he thought that that meant it was good. But then a few days later, he asked her to go out to dinner. She said she'd love to, but she couldn't because she was sick. She said that they would touch base the following week. Again, he thought it meant that she was interested. A few days later, he texted her about a movie, then no response about the movie. Now it's been a week. And it's become clear he's been ghosted. Aww. He can get over it. He barely knew her, but it's still stung. He's pretty confused to why she was texting him after #Kissgate if she wasn't into him. how would you recommend dealing with the ghosting? And please provide insight into when a first kiss should take place and if it's bad to ask permission. I'm out of practice and need a know-it-all. Thanks.
Wow.
From Jack. He's 24.
The first thing I just want to say is about, you know, why she was texting you after Kissgate if she wasn't into you. You know, I feel like a lot of the times when we're dating, we think it's this sort of like green light, red light. Either she's into me or she's not into me. It's like binary thing. But I feel like most people don't operate that way, you know, on it with like a thumbs up or a thumbs down. And so maybe she was a little bit into you, and had she not been sick, she would have been happy to go out for dinner. But, you know, there was enough time had passed. Maybe she met someone else. Maybe there was a little bit of, you know, the awkwardness kind of, you know, the thrill of your wonderful dates sort of faded. And then so she lost interest. My guess is that Kissgate was not a decisive part of that. You know, people have awkward kisses.
I agree.
And I would not beat yourself up over this kiss. My guess is that it was more just timing and the natural flow of dating that ended up having this more decisive, you know, effect.
Yeah, I agree. I can relate to the person texting. So maybe this girl was not super interested afterwards. I've definitely texted with guys that I've gone out with and not been really.
She's probably not a monster.
Yeah, like it's kind of like a politeness thing. Like ghosting is so uncomfortable. So like you will text back and forth with somebody and then like let it kind of naturally fizzle out, which is what it sounds like it happened. But yeah, I mean, I think that this person is correctly reading that the two times of saying that I'm too busy is a little bit of a, yeah, she may not have been interested, but we don't know where it originated. We don't know if it, she may have been on the fence-ish already. I think she liked him because she kissed him, but then maybe the awkwardness was like not what she needed. Who knows?
Right.
Do you think, is it possible that in all these movies, they say that that's when you know if you kiss somebody, then you know. Is it possible that the kiss was the deal breaker, Gabby?
It's possible. I've definitely kissed people and been like, yeah, nope, that's not gonna work. But on the same token, I've also kissed people where it wasn't great, but then we continued talking and I really liked them and like gave them a chance and like it ended up being better than I thought. So that's why it's really hard to say. And that's kind of the sense that I was getting from her texting him afterwards is it's like, I don't think that the kiss was a deal breaker. She probably thought it was a little awkward, but maybe she wanted to like see if it would go anywhere. And maybe it was like in the texting conversation, she over time, like Steven said, something else happened where she realized it wasn't really for her. But yeah, I have had that kind of awkward kissing situation and it is awkward.
I think I've only had that awkward kissing situation.
So what's the protocol here, though? Because, you know, back when I was in my day, when I was in my 20s, you know, many, many moons ago, you know, it was considered somewhat unromantic to ask a girl if you were allowed to kiss her. And now my understanding is that that's the protocol, right? That it's actually considered the appropriate thing to do.
Well, consent is always sexy. Consent is sexy. So knowing somebody wants to kiss you, wants to whatever, do more with you, have sex with you, like you should always absolutely get consent. The thing is, in this person's text, of course, we don't know if it's true, but they said it was obvious she wanted me to kiss her and I was a little too nervous. And that's the thing is, I understand that's like kind of confusing for guys. I mean, I feel like I try to make it obvious if I want a dude to kiss me. And I do think it's like a little awkward when somebody says, can I kiss you? But I think you could play it off as cute and coy and like, I don't know. I think I could work with that. I have worked with that actually, that has happened to me. So, but what was really awkward to me about the question was when they said, and then it was a back and forth where it was like, and then I didn't, and then like she when did. You're We're like in a standoff. It's like when you're like walking on a sidewalk and, and you do like the zigzag with somebody where you're like, oh, sorry. Oh, I'll go. Okay, no, you go.
No, and the consent issue is tricky. And that's why I like to always turn it around. And I will always ask Nicole, would you like my consent to kiss me?
That's very very considerate of you, Rob.
Yes. And then that way it's not as awkward as me asking for her consent.
You're like, I give you consent.
Yes. And then if she says, I would like your consent. And I was like, well, no, I don't. Well, that's good. Nice to know. But you don't have it.
It probably is really awkward for Jack. You know, this is the first girl he's been interested in after coming out of a significant relationship. And so, you know, don't let one bad experience, you know, one awkward moment get you down. It's certainly, you know, you've got to go through a lot of awkward, or I certainly had to go through a tremendous amount of awkward moments in order to get to, you know, a slightly less awkward moment.
Can we go back to the ghosting thing, Gabby? Sure. What's the best way for somebody who is out there to know that they are being ghosted?
You don't get a reply. No, it's awkward because people have different like responsiveness over text. Like I have friends where we can text and like I'll get a response within like 10 minutes or within an hour. And then I have friends where it's like, they will not reply to me for hours. And so it's hard sometimes, I think, when you're first dating someone to know, like, are they just a bad texter, which is some people are just bad texters, or are they not texting because they're not interested? And it's like, is it rude to ghost, or is it more rude to like text someone unsolicited and say, just so you know, I'm not interested in you? Like, I kind of feel like it's more kind to ghost sometimes.
I don't know. I think that's a weasel way out. I think it's much more polite. I mean, to just say like, hey, you know, if it's, you don't have to do the preemptive, I'm not interested. But when they ask you out, then you can say like, hey, I'm not interested. I think that's, I mean,
okay.
I agree with that. It's hard to do because you know that you're going to be disappointing that person. But I think it's a much kinder thing to do than just have them be, you know, than to put them in the position of, you know, checking their phone obsessively for the next 2 weeks.
That's true. I have done that. I think I was thinking of a different kind of ghosting, which is when you're like mid conversation with someone, or like, because I'm not a big, like, I don't want to like hold an entire conversation over text. I'd rather talk on the phone or FaceTime, but I do like send people, you know, like memes or funny things back and forth. But sometimes people want to like talk over text. And so that's, I'm imagining, like, I have definitely ghosted people like that before, where it's like, right, I just don't reply to their last question because like I am busy, or I just like can't carry on this conversation right now. And then it's like, I just never end up replying. And then like, to me, that's a form of ghosting. But I agree with you. If somebody asks you out, you should just say no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. See, I am not on the dating scene, but that I do have to court a lot of podcast guests. So sometimes that I am trying to get a survivor to come on the podcast and then they ghost me so I can relate to this conversation.
I don't believe that anyone doesn't want to be on, that any survivor.
Oh, I get ghosted, Steven. Really? No. Big time.
A reality contestant not wanting more attention. I do not believe it.
It happens.
Impossible.
It happens.
The thing about ghosting is I feel like we make a lot of excuses for ourselves of like, if somebody's not replying, we're like, oh, they're not replying because they're busy, or they're not, or at least, I don't know, I tend to do this. But I feel like if somebody likes you, they will reply to you.
Yes.
So like, I feel like that's a question I get a lot from my friends. It's like, well, he hasn't replied in a while. And I'm like, they're like, do you think he's ghosting me? I'm like, yes. Yeah, yes, yeah. He is. Because if he liked you, he would reply. Like, I feel like you never have to wonder about, you shouldn't have to wonder about whether somebody likes you or not. Like, they'll make it obvious.
Right.
Like, it should be easy.
But it's not that difficult.
But it may be a couple of days. I mean, you know, as men, I feel like, you know, I was taught to, you know, don't write, you know, you don't immediately write right after you have a really good date. If you text 15 minutes later asking for the second date, you know, that's looks a little needy, and it might you know, spur a negative response.
No? I get that. I feel like that's kind of outdated.
Yeah.
I actually hate that. I 15 minutes is probably a little soon, but I don't mind a same day text or like next morning text saying like, hey, I had a really fun time. They don't necessarily have to ask for the next date right then, but right. I do think like, why are we pretending like we don't have these like magical cell phone devices that we can literally reach each other in like 0.01 seconds? Why are we pretending like I'm going to wait 3 days when you can literally text someone immediately.
I totally agree with you about that. Like, check in, say it a great time, you know, but I don't think you have to, you know, I don't think you're not showing interest if you don't ask for, you know, for the immediate, for the date, like immediately thereafter.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we're getting into something that's a little bit different than ghosting, where if you're slow to respond, you know, but, you know, still have interest, it's different than, you know, not responding at all, or, you know, responding with, yeah, I'm sick, or, you know, I can't, I'd like to, but I can't.
Right.
It's a little different.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Stephen, let's do one more question here.
All right. Lady doctor got kissed by a lady nurse. I'm a lady doctor, and recently one of my nurses kissed me after a party I took her to. I was surprisingly into it, but I'm worried about the consequences of taking our relationship further. I live in a Midwestern state where there are no laws to prevent me from being fired for homosexual behavior, and I work for a conservative group who is independent. We make our own decisions, not owned by a hospital system. I researched medical ethics and my contract to make sure I wasn't breaking any doctor ethical code, which I wasn't. Mainly, you can't date patients, nor their parents, nor sexually harass your coworkers. There are other roadblocks besides this. I'm not out to my family. My religion frowns upon this, etc. But I was hoping you could give your two cents on whether I should date my nurse. Keep in mind, she is super cute. Maybe have Nicole weigh in on this matter too? Thanks. Lady doctor.
I don't want to get Nicole's input on dating, nurses dating doctors.
Dating lady doctors, too.
Well, you know, I prefer that she doesn't date anybody outside the marriage.
It's a good preference.
Seems like but that's, you know, I'm old fashioned.
seems like a small ask. Yeah, now to each their own, but it seems... Yeah, mm-hmm. That checks out. Yeah, there's a lot to unpack here, because you have I heard part of it was like the same gender relationship aspect of it. And then the other part was like the work implication. That's what I heard from the question.
Yeah.
Yes. And the parental issue, you know, there's the religious issue, but it sounds like that those are maybe less salient for Lady Doctor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wasn't sure if Lady Doctor...
For Lady Doctor.
Did Lady Doctor's... I don't know if Lady Doctor, like, knows her own, sexuality, because she said, oh, I was into it, but I'm not out to my family, so I don't know, like... I'm curious whether this is the first time that this person has, like, experienced attraction to the same gender, or mm-hmm. whether... It's like they've never dated someone of the same gender, but they've there's like a lot to unpack there, because there's just a lot.
Right. Because mm-hmm. she said I was surprisingly into it. So it did sound at the start of the question like maybe this was her first same gender relationship. And then by the end of the question, you know, I'm not out to my family or my religion frowns upon this. You know, it sounded like maybe this was a more established preference.
Okay. So. There's a lot here. I guess why don't we start with the dating in the workplace? Gabby, do you think that this could be a problem?
Oh, yeah. Regardless of gender, I don't think it's a great idea to work in the workplace. I mean, to date in the workplace. I get that it happens. It depends how close they are together. I get that. They looked up the like laws behind it, but I know a few people in very recent memory that have dated people that they've worked with, friends of mine, and mm-hmm. have broken up and have really felt uncomfortable about it afterwards, either because they had to see that person all the time or just, yeah, it complicated things. So I think that in and of itself is definitely risky, regardless of whether it's like okayed by HR. You just have to think about the implications of, like, what if you see this person if things don't go well?
And there's there's a power issue here too, right? This is a doctor, and this is one of her nurses. And I feel like she specified one of my nurses.
I didn't know if they... Oh, okay. Okay. I wasn't sure if there was a direct power thing there, because usually mm-hmm. that would not be allowed by like HR.
I don't know. I don't know the hierarchy of a hospital, like how much, like does one of my nurses, is that a direct report? Like, Rob, you probably have more insight into this than I do.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know exactly that. I can text Nicole about this and see what she says. But yeah, I think it's tricky. But if she's saying that she looked into it and it was no laws are barring it, then it seems like it's okay.
And but you're right, Stephen. Like in general, like if there is a power dynamic, then that does add another level of it does add another level to it.
But back in the day, didn't most people meet their significant others through work? I feel like that's like now no longer there is like an increasing taboo around it because of the inherent power dynamics and because of the sense of if something goes wrong, you know, we're stuck in this confined system together. Mm-hmm. But it really seems like, you know, before technology, before there were apps, that's how people met the people in their lives. You know, that's how they you know, became close to people.
Yeah, I think that, and I'm sort of pulling these numbers out of my butt, but I think that I've heard this before, but I feel like 25% of people like have met their spouse somehow through their work.
Oh,
I believe that. Yeah. And people used to like date their neighbors and stuff like that, too. Like in the olden times, people really just dated because of proximity and convenience. But then again, like you could end up with people that you're not really great for because it's like that was the only way to meet people. So I don't know. Yeah. Regardless of like the power, it is a tricky situation. So I think that that person would have to decide whether they think that the rewards of dating this person are worth the risks that could potentially arise at work if it were to not work out.
Yeah. Keep in mind, she is super cute.
Yes, super cute.
Keep in mind, she's super cute.
No, I've never liked dating in the workplace. I feel like it's too tense. And then if something goes wrong, it's just such a negative, you know, it's a negative experience afterwards. There's like hostility, there's animosity. And like, why? Like you've had one smooch with this person. And as cute as it is, and how great as that smooch may have been, like why? On the other hand, you know, I clearly I'm on the fence.
Alternatively, you could have a great romance like the hit TV show Scrubs or Grey's Anatomy and end up with the person you were meant to be with.
Left and right on those shows.
They're always hooking up on those shows. So, yeah, it could be this person's love of their life. We never know.
Okay. So I asked Nicole, are doctors allowed to date nurses? She said they always do. and I said, well, isn't that an HR violation? She said, not unless it interferes with their jobs or if they get caught banging in the med room. I don't know if happened.
So don't get caught.
In Grey's Anatomy, it does.
Whatever you decide, don't get caught banging in the med room.
Yes. Okay. And I think you have to, maybe have a DTR type conversation about work versus outside of work.
I don't know. I just actually met two doctors who were like, one was had been the other's supervisor, and now they're married for many years and have a great relationship. So I'm changing my opinion.
Okay.
Okay. That's fair. So now we have to go back to lady doctors. I don't know if it was a revelation or her experience basically realizing that she was attracted to another woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that that's like totally valid. Like, assuming if this person is a doctor, like they're a little bit older, you know, they've gone through med school, they're a doctor now. So I don't know whether they've like never experienced that, but I mean, a lot of people figure out their sexuality way later in life. And I feel like that's like totally normal.
Yeah.
Look, go for it. Only one way to find out.
Yeah. But I totally get that. It's if you have like parents or like a religious community that you feel like may not accept you, that can be really scary. Like there's a reason why like so many teenagers and so many people don't come out because they feel like they either like won't be in a safe place if they do, or they won't be understood if they do. So I can totally empathize with this person like feeling hesitance about this, because that's like not an easy thing to tell people that you think may not necessarily like understand or support you if you do tell them.
Yeah. But look, there's nothing to tell if it's not going to work out. So I feel like step one, see if it's going to work out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Step one, talk to lady nurse and maybe go out, maybe have another smooch and see how you feel about it. And if this person, if Lady Nurse is, I don't know if, you know, she's lesbian or bi or whatever, she is, like, if you are not, out, you could talk about it with that person and say, like, you know, I've never had this experience before, but like, I don't know, like, you know, there are definitely people that you can ask to get more insight into that kind of thing.
All right, let me ask one other quick question, related subject. This is from another listener that she says that I'm a gay woman living in the Bible Belt. It's definitely harder for me to date as LGBT in this area since there's not a ton of us. Plus, if I meet an LGBT woman, they're one, already in a relationship, or two, I'm interested in them only as friends. There are LGBT bars, but I dislike the bar scene. I've never had luck with the dating app. Should I consider moving across the country so I can have a productive dating life? I'm nearly 30 and I don't want to be alone forever, but I also don't want to leave my friends and family right now. Thanks, Gabby, Rob, and Steven. So Gabby, would you recommend somebody moves to a city that might have a more happening LGBT dating scene?
I feel like I am definitely not qualified to answer this question, but I say, like, chase your dreams. No, I mean, I know,
but
people
you travel a lot.
Yeah, I knew people that grew up in the Bible Belt, and I lived in the Philippines, which is, like, it's a very confusing country because it's, on the one hand, it can be very progressive and you have a lot of, like, drag queens and, like, there's this, like, thriving LGBT community. However, it's an extremely Catholic community, which, like, basically does not recognize, like, any same sex marriage, like, relationships, whatever. So it's, like, this very confusing thing. And I think that it can be really hard to live somewhere where you feel like you are not meeting people, or there's just not as much diversity there, or that your views are not accepted, as in maybe the case with the lady doctor's question more so than this question. So I think that if you are willing to take the plunge and move and you feel like it would enhance your life, then absolutely go for it. I feel like, I remember hearing, I think, I can't believe I'm bringing this person up on this podcast, but Jeremy Crawford from my season, I think, said this on First One Out, that he grew up in South Carolina and then moved to New York City when, you know, and, like, thrived. So, you know, I've definitely, like, heard that's been a great option for people.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a common thing in New York for people from smaller communities or very conservative places to move to New York to find a much bigger and more, maybe a much bigger LGBT community.
Maybe that it's like a vacation, visit a city for a couple of weeks, see what it's like, and then have the opportunity to potentially go set up there before you just move.
Yeah.
Like a rum springa.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's a great idea. Yeah. I think there's something to be said about living somewhere where you have a community, whether it's an LGBT community or whether, like, whatever community means to you, whether it's, like, a cultural identity, a racial identity, LGBT, there is something I feel like you don't even know you're missing it until you find it. And then you, like, really just find your people. I mean, I have a friend in DC that basically told me that he felt that way, where it's like he didn't really have an LGBT community. And then he moved to DC and there's a huge community here and he feels so at home. He's met so many people. And, like, so I guess actually I am going to take a firm stance on this and say, hell yeah, do it. Move. That's awesome.
Move. Okay. All right. Gabby says, pick up and move. All right. Steven, you have any a take on this one?
The challenge is that the family, right? It's such a, you know, it's such a hard thing to leave your family.
It's tough.
Yeah. And, you know, it certainly seems like, you know, to have this richer community, that it does make a lot of sense to move to New York, but, or, you know, other big city. It's hard. I mean, it's such a tough choice because, and, you know, then you're also talking about putting down roots somewhere else. Cause whoever you meet in that other place, they're going to be from that place or from a different place. And so then it becomes, you know, even trickier to find ways to get home. But, you know, we are living in a smaller and smaller world, which is, you know, more and more FaceTime is better and better. So maybe there's ways to keep both.
Gabby, we got some updates from our listeners that you were not the only person that season one of the Love Know-It-Alls touched, that we heard some updates from some of our season one listeners, including we had a woman named Kay, and she was dating somebody in Canada long distance. And she wrote in about how they wanted to be together and she was considering becoming a stripper. And she wrote into us, and then we got a response back from her. She has an update on her situation from season one. She said, after hearing you and Steven and Natalie Anderson on the Love Know-It-Alls, that her boyfriend and she decided that they would continue to be long distance while he finishes last year of school. He finished in November, which allowed her to quit her job as a stripper and for him to save a ton of money. In this time, she was able to put a little bit of money aside while he was also able to save money staying in Canada. And they now have an apartment together. And while Natalie Anderson thought that this was a catfish situation, she is no Dina Lohan and has since had her boyfriend move to New Jersey with her. And he has been living with her for the past few months, and they're loving every minute, and they're so glad that she doesn't have to continue being a stripper, and is very thankful for all the advice, and hopefully they can make it to Live Know-It-Alls one day so we can meet them in person.
Oh, that's exciting.
That's amazing. Oh my God. Bing. That's so great.
Wow.
How exciting.
And then Steven, this is another one. This is somebody who we didn't talk to last season, but they wrote in to say that this is less of a question, more of a thank you. I listened to the first season of Love Know-It-Alls and I was in an unhealthy relationship, and it helped me realize that I needed to start taking steps to reevaluate it and eventually end it. During the transition process between my breakup and being ready to date again, I went through and listened to every episode of the Love Know-It-Alls a second time, and it was very therapeutic.
Wow.
Listening again encouraged me to approach dating, being 100% myself and accepting only that I wanted to date someone who liked me for me. Fast forward,
hell yeah,
and I'm in the happiest and healthiest relationship I've ever been in, with extreme optimism for the future. I highly recommend any listeners going back and listening to the old episodes for a new perspective. If you're going to go through a breakup, it helped me a ton. I really appreciate your guys' casual advice. It was just what I needed to hear. P.S. My girlfriend is a huge Survivor fan. Thank you so much.
Wow. Well, this is sort of feeds back into that first question of like, how much should you be yourself? And I think this is a pretty definitive answer that if you're not finding someone who likes you for who you are, you're never going to be truly satisfied.
That's right. Yes, queen or king. I forget who it was that just wrote that in. That's amazing.
Yes. We think it's a king.
Okay. Yes, king.
Okay. Yes. And also we learned, take your king size mattress and put it off the floor.
Elevate the mattress. So they love you for you, so long as your mattress is on a frame.
That's right. That's right. Because, you know, I think it's sort of like when you bring your partner back there, it's sort of like you're not like trash on the floor. You're elevating them too, putting them on a pedestal for the time being.
That's right.
That's so great, though. I love hearing that last one, because I think it's just so empowering when people leave a relationship that is not working for them. And there is like so much power in that I seriously am like, unironically, like, yes, we stand a self-aware king that is able to know what he is worth and now is in a healthy, happy relationship. That is so amazing.
Yeah. Well, I think people get bogged down when they are single for a long time of like, oh, I suck, nobody likes me. But then you can also get bogged down if you're in a relationship that's not working, of that, you know, oh, I suck because of the relationship that I'm in. So either way, if you're feeling good about yourself, that's all that matters.
Yeah,
absolutely. I totally agree.
Okay. Hashtag elevate yourself, to get back to the mattress theme.
Wow.
Well, no, that's what Gabby kept saying throughout our mattress discussion. Elevate yourself.
Did I say that?
You said it like three or four times. I was like, that's got to be the hashtag.
Yes.
Okay. Of course I would like my own hashtag. Yeah.
Just like Gabby put it out into the universe that I need to be on the Love Know-It-Alls, and I'm going to make this tape and apply to be on Survivor so that I can accomplish my dream. Then she put it out there and manifested that. Yeah. And then she told Mike White that, okay, one day I'm going to be on the Love Know-It-Alls. And then she made that dream a reality.
Yes, I did. Thank you for having me. It was so fun. And I hope that I hope that everybody who wrote in got something useful out of it. I don't know.
Now, to all the people that are listening, like, oh, I would date Gabby. No, you're not interested. You don't want to date a Survivor fan, right?
No, that's not what I said. However,
you said that would be my nightmare to date somebody who knew me from Survivor.
Who solely likes me because of Survivor. Yeah, that's right. No, yeah, please. No. Sliding into DMs is like not a cool thing, regardless of whether it's a Survivor player or not. Like, I feel like it's just like, I don't think that really works.
Can you slide into DMs? I thought you had to like follow each other. Is that...
Some people just have their DMs open so that they can. And that was a little harsh. I feel bad because people do DM me and like I don't mind it. I reply to a lot of people. Not everybody, please. But because like there's too much. But like, if you know, there's like Twitter accounts that post screenshots of like creepy messages that women get.
Right.
Thankfully, I haven't gotten like too many of those, but. So I don't want to like make people feel bad if they've ever sent me a DM. As long as it wasn't creepy, it's fine.
Yeah, well, I saw, you know, there was a lot of people that I saw this during this past season where somebody would slide into DMs and not necessarily in a like a suggestive way. And then the person wrote back, but then they'd like, hey, here's my screenshot of my DM conversation with this person, which I kind of feel like good or bad. Like, I feel like it's a little bit of like an invasion of privacy.
Oh, that's crappy. Yeah, that would actually be my true nightmare is if I'm not on any of the dating apps right now and I've thought about going back on them. My nightmare would be like if somebody on Reddit screenshot my profile and they're like, I found Gabby on Hinge. Like, I would die. Like, I would hate that so much. So,
wait,
yeah.
Why?
Because it's private. That's not like it's not Survivor related. Like, you know, I'm just a person out there in the world trying to date.
I hear that, but like an online dating profile is not private.
But it's at least limited to like the people in your area that like fit the criteria.
They're putting themselves out there as much as you're putting yourself out there.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I think it's just like, I mean, I totally get it if like that person screenshots it to their friends.
No,
and
you're
they're
right.
Like,
that's creepy.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I wasn't. Yeah, you're totally right. I don't know why I second guessed that for a second. It's not fine. Yeah, that's
like, I don't need like the 15-year-olds on Reddit to like know what my dating app profile looks like. Not that I have one.
Right. But I guess my broader point was like, I would hate for you to be inhibiting what you're doing out of your life because you're afraid of like some sort of like online. You know, reaction, you know, like,
Well, yeah, you've obviously made it work for you. So that's great. So maybe I need to like be less scared of that and do it. And then this is like my warning. That's like, if anybody like posts a private DM, I can't believe somebody did that, Rob. I can't believe you heard about that. I've never heard of that. That's like,
I'm talking about like more like on Instagram, more so than on the dating apps.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Still creepy, but yeah. So I maybe I'll get back out there into the dating world eventually. Who, I don't know.
Okay.
This is such an uplifting note to leave this on.
All right.
No, hashtag Gabby. Elevate yourself, Gabby.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the thing. I have elevated myself. I've elevated myself, and I think that my standards are like quite high. So therefore, I'm not just going around dating. I have high standards. He needs to have a box spring.
Gabby, if you are on a date with somebody, at what point now would you tell them that you appeared on the television show Survivor?
Oh, good question.
That is a good question. I feel like I need advice because I feel like I would not bring it up unless it came up organically. I've had that happen. Like I moved to DC. I've been meeting a lot of people, just like friends, and we'll talk and I won't bring it up because like that's not how I define myself. And then like later they'll add me on Instagram and be like, I'm sorry, what? And I'm like, yes. Oh yeah, sorry, I just didn't want to mention it. And so like usually people will find out eventually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't want too hot or too cold. You don't want somebody who is way obsessed with the show, and you don't want somebody who hates the show.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. No, you cannot hate Survivor. I could not date anybody that hates Survivor because, like, I'm going to be watching next season and I'm hoping that I'm always going to be watching it. So I hope that my future significant other, like, we got to be able to watch Survivor on Wednesday nights.
Oh, Who would hate Survivor? It's such a good premise. I can see not watching Survivor, but who would hate it?
True. I don't think people who have seen it, I don't think people hate it that actually know the show. They just,
you can't, it's not possible to hate it.
Well, at least, you know, that's 15% of the people that have been on the show.
Yeah, exactly.
So they hate the show, or did they hate their quote unquote edit?
Well, exactly.
Question for another day. Gabby, thank you so much for coming on with us, for resuscitating the Love Know-It-Alls. Anybody who took anything away from this show today, that they have to thank Gabby, and anybody who hated this show also, they should thank Gabby, but not mention her on social media.
Yeah, they can blame me. It's totally fine. I did. I resuscitated this. We used the hashtag.
We ghosted. We ghosted on the podcast audience.
You did. Yeah. No, thanks for having me. And thank you for, I feel like you indulged me because I was so into it for this special edition of this Valentine's Day Love Know-It-Alls. And I hope it was fun for you guys. I had a lot of fun. I hope it was fun for the listeners too.
No, Steven is also ecstatic to have the Love Know-It-Alls back, right?
I love this show. I would do it. I would do it all every day.
Steven wants to cancel the real Know-It-Alls and do this every Wednesday night.
That would go over well.
Yeah. We'll just come on after Survivor and then talk about people's dating problems.
As a player, I think I would have appreciated that as a player.
Yeah. Steven, which one of the emails gets the fishy?
Oh, definitely the one that was just calling to thank us for being inspirational. My God.
Yeah, we get the fishy for that one. Okay. All right. Of course, Gabby, you want to give out any social media handles? You're not going to give out your Hinge.
No, I don't have a Hinge right now to give out. But yeah, I'm on Twitter at Gabby Pascuzzi.
Hinge, somebody has to know you, right?
No, they changed that. You don't have to know anybody on Hinge now. You have to like answer questions. I don't know. I've like seen my friends' profiles and I'm too scared to make my own. Maybe after this, I'll make my own. How about I have a poll, tweet at me if I should make my own. I just make all my decisions based on what people on Twitter want me to do.
That's a great policy.
That's how I'm going to live my life from now on.
Steven says get on OK Cupid.
I loved OK Cupid. I mean, obviously had great results from OK Cupid, but I think, I don't know if nothing is web-based. And, you know, this was like back when people were using it on their computers, you know, now it's all app-based.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, I was thinking that. Like, I feel like the desktop is a little outdated. It might be for a little older people. I'm 25, turning 26. Okay, I got some years ahead of me.
You got your whole life ahead.
You should hope. I hope so. Jesus. So, follow me on all the social media. Gabby Pascuzzi. I'm Gabscuzzi on Instagram.
Okay. Hey, look, Steven got free flowers for getting married from finding his love of his life on OkCupid. Yeah, so
it was great. I got to both find the love of my life and get free flowers. So it was like two great things.
OkCupid sent you flowers?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. You should go on one of those commercials. It's like it worked for me.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. I'm available.
Okay. All right. And of course, since the last time that we spoke, Steven Fishback has also started a podcast of his own, Steven.
Oh, yes. Thank you for mentioning it. The great love of my life, in addition to Julia, is the Paraphrase podcast, where I interview novelists about the openings to their books. I actually just yesterday posted a new episode with the incredible author, Garth Greenwell, whose book actually is all about love, or not necessarily, just an intense relationship, I should say, that is not actually, maybe it's love, maybe it borders on love. You know, it's not clear. Defined. So I would recommend you check that out at paraphrasepodcast.com.
All right. And then we will be back together for the Survivor Know-It-Alls when we get to talk about the edge of extinction and everything that is contained on the edge of extinction island in 1 week's time when we get back together after the Survivor premiere. Just a 1 hour episode. No heavy lifting for the first week. Yeah.
Really?
1 hour episode, and then we'll be live at 9:15 p.m. Eastern time on the East Coast.
One boot?
I
guess nobody's going home, huh? I mean, they're going to extinction.
Well, we'll see. We'll have to see what happens. Somebody could. You get the choice. Wow. You swipe left or swipe right for Edge of Extinction
Can
Island.
Can you imagine being like the first one and being like, nah, I'm good. I don't need it anymore.
That's, it should be like an iPad, enough. And then you have to swipe which way you're going.
Yeah, yeah.
swipe left if you just want to go home.
You have to smash the left urn versus smashing the right urn. Yeah,
but then you don't want to end up on Ghost Island.
Yeah, Ghosted right. Island.
Ghosted Island, exactly.
Okay, there you go. All right. And then, of course, to take us out, that we have a closing theme for the Love Know-It-Alls.
Oh,
and unfortunately, I could not find a copy of the original file from The Great Wolf from America. So we have to listen to the Dr. Mike remix from the season finale of season one of the Love Know-It-Alls. So take it away, the Dr. Mike remix.
I get aroused every time I listen to this song.
That makes
doesn't take much, I don't think that.
Oh, God.
The hottest guys are around. The hottest are about to go.
Can Brett LaBelle sing this one, too?
Oh, that'd be fun,
probably.
Like they've done the deed a million times. Well, actually, they never really get laid. At all. They're gonna blow you up.
See, they said they're gonna blow you, but that's not getting laid.
Away.
Steven and Rob, without a doubt, do stuff you can only dream about. They'll blow you up.
Knock, knock.
All right, Steve, so should we delete this podcast or should we still post it?
I mean, I would want to delete about two-thirds of it. The Dr. Mike remix is actually, and as great as that initial thing is, like the Dr. Mike remix may be even greater.